Streaming 24/7, on-demand archives, podcasts, and more.
TalkZone.com.
TalkZone.com. Saying a lot for planet Earth.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air.
Shotgun formation with Cadillac Williams in the backfield. Preston Parker in motion. Now a wingman. Hand off to Cadillac. Running the draw. Cadillac Williams. He got a first down 30. He's in the 25-20. Cadillac 50, 10-5. Touchdown Tampa Bay. Drop play on third down 11. And that's the dagger. The Bucs get a touchdown run from Canny.
The four receivers became the shotgun. Shuffles his feet, turns it along, and this one in the direction of Mike Sims Walker. And this one's going to be batted and caught. Touchdown! Oh my gosh! How did that happen? It was batted back into the arms of Mike Thomas, and the Jaguars have won it. Oh, Hail Mary!
This is Wayne Larrabee with senior editor Eric Edholm of Pro Football Weekly and the PFW staff. Welcome to an in-depth look at professional football. Coming up, Giants and Eagles in the link and Steelers and Raiders redo hostilities.
And in the way we hear it, we'll take a look at whether Sidney Rice and Bernard Berrien are leaving the Vikings hamstrung.
It's all just ahead on Pro Football Weekly.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air!
Along with the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkish, this is Wayne Larrabee. And filling in for Hub this week is senior editor Eric Edholm. The Way We Hear It features news and information gathered by the editors and reporters of Pro Football Weekly. And Eric, let's start with you. Big game coming up, the 100th renewal of Packers and Vikings, if you include the postseason game, and you should if you're keeping score at home in this series between these two NFC North Division rivals. Now, all season, the Vikings have missed the talents of Sidney Rice, their great wide receiver, the Pro Bowler, 1,300-yard season a year ago, but he's been on the shelf, started the season on the PUP list with a hip injury, has been eligible to come off of that PUP list and eligible to be activated, but so far has not. And what's the story on him? Do you anticipate him being ready for this weekend's game?
It's very much up in the air, Wayne, and the situation is he's on the PUP list. He's now been practicing for 2+ weeks. They have a small window here. They have until November 24th, next Wednesday, to activate him. Right now, I mean, the coaching staff and the medical staff cleared him to practice fully. He was out there. Everything seemed to be A-OK. It appeared he was going to play last week against Chicago. He told him ahead of time, I'm not ready. There have been some conspiracy theorists out there who looked at the timing of his hip surgery, which came in August, and it was an injury he suffered in January. Could have come earlier. Look, he's a possible free agent to be. I mean, depending on what the CBA rules are, he could be free next year, and he's looking to cash in. He's got Drew Rosenhaus's agent. You know, they've had to do a little damage control. Rice's camp has had to come out. He had a blog he posted on his website. Rosenhaus said, look, the timing of this is not related to the injury, but they're shorthanded at receiver. I mean, Bernard Berrien was up last week, didn't play, you know, and all of a sudden you're missing some guys on that receiving core right there.
Well, you know, there's no question about it. Sidney Rice's presence on the field, and they tried to replace him with Randy Moss, and that lasted for about 3 weeks. And his presence on the field allows Percy Harvin to work on the slot inside, Eric, and that makes a huge deal. That's a huge difference for their offense.
Oh, it's affected everybody, Wayne. Berrien was an afterthought last year. Rice was Brett Favre's favorite target, and like you said, it opened everything up in the middle. Shanko had 11 touchdowns. He's had a really tough season so far. Harvin's done his best playing on a bad ankle, but when Berrien kind of threw them for a loop last week and didn't play, and when Harvin got hurt in that game, I mean, they were down to Greg Lewis, Greg Camarillo. They were playing Jeff Dugan in the slot. He's an H-back type. So, I mean, all their weapons now have been negated because of this sort of this one thing, you know, steamrolling and tumbling into something they never expected.
The Dallas Cowboys last week took a 1-7 record into the new Meadowlands, playing the best team in the NFC, the New York Giants, on a 5-game winning streak, and the Cowboys just trampled them. How much of it is new coach Jason Garrett, and how much of it is just this team was ready to play a good game with all the talent they have?
Yeah, it certainly was surprising to see them come in there and play with the passion that I think people have been crying out for all season long. Both sides of the ball. I mean, John Kitna was obviously leading the charge offensively, but they got two huge plays from other guys. Brian McCann, a reserve corner, 101-yard touchdown return. That seemed to poke the hole in the Giants and put them out of their misery. Big screen play to Felix Jones. I think they took a step back. They simplified things. They went to pads on Wednesdays, Wayne, and it was kind of a throwback to the Jimmy Johnson and Bill Parcells days. And I think the atmosphere has changed at least temporarily. Guys said that, you know, Wade Phillips is too soft on people. You know, he made too many excuses for his players. Dez Bryant, reportedly, our sources are telling us, falling asleep in meetings, and they weren't punishing him. So Garrett has been very serious. He's laid down some rules, and he's very serious about cleaning up the whole atmosphere around this team right now.
Meanwhile, the Giants, just a chink of the armor, just a speed bump for them, or are they still the team that we all thought they were 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, I think, you know, they're probably never as good as we think, and they're not as bad as we think. I mean, they're somewhere in the middle. This is a very talented team, but we've seen some potential weaknesses come out. If they don't come out and dominate a team in the first quarter, they tend to get themselves in some bad spots. It just hasn't happened a lot this year. I think Tom Coughlin, when he looks back, may think this is a positive and say, all right, I got a teaching point here. I can now show my guys they're not as good as they think they are. So it'll be interesting heading into this week's big game against Philadelphia.
I got to tell you, it was a shock to see what happened to the Redskins against the Philadelphia Eagles. Not that the Redskins lost the game, but the way they lost it. And prior to the game, announcing that Donovan McNabb, the quarterback who either one of two things, wasn't smart enough to run the two-minute drill 2 weeks earlier or wasn't in shape enough to run the two-minute drill, gets a five-year contract extension. Everybody was saying, oh, it's $40 million guaranteed. Well, that's not the case, is it, with that deal?
This move had all the earmarks of a PR move. It was announced the day of the game, like you said. The $40 million was what everyone latched onto. 78 was the high number, the total, you know, maximum number. But since the details of that contract have come out, we've figured out that, look, the Redskins can walk away, wipe their hands of this thing if they're not happy with McNabb, and pay him only an additional $3.5 million to what they've already paid him this year. So when you think about it in quarterback money terms, it's not all that much. If they keep him around for next year, they're probably going to pay him in the $13 million range, which, again, top 10 quarterback money, but it's not elite money. So they have a plan in place, and it doesn't include Donovan McNabb long term. It doesn't appear.
It doesn't appear their problems are over in Washington either. I mean, this was a four-win club a year ago. They've already got four wins this year, but it appears to me as we reach the midseason that they're beginning to fall back into form, regardless of whether it's Donovan McNabb at quarterback or Mike Shanahan on the sidelines. Albert Haynesworth, Redskins defensive lineman, much talked about. I mean, that scene of him in the fourth quarter, Eric, where he's just kind of laying on the ground and barely got up to make a run at a play that was going away from him, I think said it all.
I think so, too. He looked like a player who had given up in that game and maybe has given up on the season, too. Defensively, they're struggling. Offensively, they just don't have the weapons. And you're right, those four wins, they better enjoy those because there may not be a ton more of them.
Eric Edholm, our senior editor, he'll be with us for the entire show this week. Hub Arkish is on assignment. We'll be back with more Way We Hear It when Pro Football Weekly continues. You are listening to Pro Football Weekly, featuring the publisher and editor, Hub Arkish, and the Pro Football Weekly staff. Hub is on assignment this week, and we're joined in the studio by senior editor Eric Edholm and by associate editor Dan Parr. And Dan, part of your beat is Carolina, where bad news on the running back front. Boy, the Panthers scraping the barrel due to injuries. D'Angelo Williams' foot injury lands him on the IR this week. Tell us about it.
Yeah, it's that time of year where injuries are starting to pile up, and then the Panthers are in really bad shape. Williams is done for the year. He became the fourth Panthers player in about an eight-day span to end up on injury reserve, and these are key players like Jeff Otah. He didn't play it all this season. Thomas Davis, another guy who didn't play it all this season. They were hoping they were going to be able to help him in the second half, though, and put up a little bit of a respectable run to close out the season. Jonathan Stewart, the number two running back to D'Angelo Williams, is still out with a head injury. So they're down to their third quarterback and their third running back heading into this game against the Ravens in Week 11.
Yeah, let me ask you about that third quarterback. With Jimmy Clausen, the rookie starter, out, he suffered a concussion the final play of the game. There's no two ways about it. They're the worst offensive team in the league with or without Clausen. They're down to probably Tony Pike this week. How much practice time has he had? How much time with the offense has he had? What can we expect out of him at all?
Well, we did see Tony Pike a couple weeks ago. He did get some playing time in a game situation, so he did get some reps. He's practiced, I'm sure, all this week with the first team because Clausen hasn't been able to go. So he has a little bit of preparation time to get ready. He is a sixth-round pick, though. The expectations are low. He's not in a good situation with an offensive line that's not at full strength, with a backfield that's not at full strength, and with a pretty young receiving core. So expectations going into this Ravens game are pretty low. If he can keep them in it, it would be a pretty impressive achievement.
Associate Editor Dan Parr is with us. Dan, one team that is getting healthier, it seems like, at this midseason stretch is the New Orleans Saints, expecting to get Reggie Bush back from that broken leg earlier this year?
Yeah, finally, for the first time since week two, it looks like they're going to have Reggie Bush on the field. Now, what he's capable of doing, we'll see. It's probably going to take him a little bit of time to get up to game speed, but that's a big help. They were struggling with the running game all season, and to have a weapon like that that they can use as a receiver, split him out wide, and also as a decoy in certain situations, it's going to help this offense, I'd imagine.
So now, Dan, the big mystery is the fact that Pierre Thomas, who suffered an ankle injury, some people thought he would be back before Bush. What's his status? Is he going to be back at some point in the regular season? When can we expect to see him again?
It looks like he's targeting a Week 12 return, so he's not going to be able to go this week. He hasn't been able to practice yet, even though coming off the bye, you know, with the bye week, they thought maybe they could get him ready. It's lingering, though. This is an ankle injury that, you know, caused some friction between him and Sean Payton earlier in the year, and this is a guy in the final year of his deal. He needs to finish strong this year to go into the offseason with a strong hand when it comes time to negotiate for a new deal, so there's a lot riding on these last several games for Pierre Thomas, and he needs to get out there to prove to the Saints and to some other teams that might be interested in him that he is capable of being, you know, an every down back worthy of a long-term investment.
Dan, thank you very much. We'll talk to you next week. We're also joined by Associate Editor Arthur Arkush. And Art, one of your teams, the Indianapolis Colts, the offense has really been decimated by injuries. I mean, the two teams that come to mind that have been injury depleted are the Green Bay Packers and especially the Indianapolis Colts. Are some fresh troops on the way here for Peyton Manning and company?
Well, it appears as if they will be soon. I'm not quite sure that two of their top three running backs, Joseph Addai and Mike Hart, will be back this week. It's looking more likely like week 12 or week 13. Austin Colley, who suffered a concussion in Philadelphia, is getting close and has a good chance to play this weekend in Foxborough. So, you know, help is on the way, but in the meantime, they've really been struggling. The offense has put arguably their two worst performances of the season back-to-back together, and Manning can't do it all by himself. He's working with a bunch of, you know, undrafted rookies and guys who just haven't had the opportunity to get the timing down and a lot of the subtle things that Manning does at the line, whether it be hand gestures or, you know, just a simple nod to get on the same page with his receivers. And you can see that it really has been affecting their overall performance.
But let's also point out the fact, Arthur, that Donald Brown, a first-round pick, has been a huge disappointment. Anthony Gonzalez, a first-round pick, hasn't been able to come back to his level of performance. Did either one of these guys figure into the team's plans beyond this season?
Oh, that's a great question. With Anthony Gonzalez especially, he's had a couple of years of trouble with the injuries, and they are definitely, the patience is wearing thin with him. Donald Brown is still in his second season. Yes, he's been a huge disappointment, and they also are, you know, growing a bit frustrated with his lack of production. I'm not quite sure if they're going to be ready to cut the cord with him yet, but there has been rumblings that both of these players are kind of on watch, if you will.
Arthur, really quick, let's go on to another one of your teams, the Jacksonville Jaguars. Mike Thomas, who answered the Hail Mary at the end of the pass last week to win that ball game, has he become the number one weapon in the passing game for the Jaguars now?
Yeah, he really has. Gerard looks to him on third down all the time. He's really valuable on end-arounds, reverses. He's really become that number one guy, and it's as much about Mike Sims-Walker, who's been very disappointing this season. But Mike Thomas has done the extra things off the field. He's staying healthy. Hamstrings were an issue as a rookie, but he's gotten that worked out, and he's really an emerging star in Jacksonville.
And last question, the loss of Aaron Kampen, defensive end, serious blow for this club?
It's a devastating blow to the Jaguars. Beyond Kampen, they've got pretty much nothing in the way of proven pass rushers. Derek Harvey was benched earlier this season, former first-rounder. They've got Jeremy Mincy. He's kind of been a journeyman. And then a pair of rookies, Austin Lane and Larry Hart. Again, both guys that haven't proven it yet, and they're going to have to do so in a hurry a little quicker than Jacksonville had imagined.
No question about it. Thank you very much, Associate Editor Arthur Arkush. The games are up next on Pro Football Weekly. Welcome back to Pro Football Weekly. This is Wayne Larrivee along with senior editor Eric Edholm of PFW. In the NFL this weekend, the Bears and Dolphins began on Thursday night in Miami, and as usual, we focus on the Sunday and Monday night games in the NFL this week. Well, the Baltimore Ravens take a 6-3 mark, good for first in the AFC North Carolina, where the Panthers are a dismal 1-8 in the NFC South. We talked about the Panthers, their injury problems a moment ago. The Ravens have been off since a week ago Thursday when they blew a late lead in a 26-21 last-second loss to the Falcons. Panthers have been outscored by 56 points during their three-game losing streak, so a couple of teams coming in on a different level. The Ravens, as good as they are defensively, however, do not have a real true shutdown corner, and that hurt them when Matt Ryan of the Falcons aired it out 10 nights ago in the fourth quarter. But Carolina starter Jimmy Clausen, if he can go, we talked about the concussion situation, or third stringer Tony Pike probably don't have the experience to exploit this deficiency. The Buffalo Bills are coming off their first win of the season, a 14-12 victory over the Detroit Lions. This week they're in Cincinnati, where the Bengals are currently trying to win their first game since September 26th when they beat Carolina. The Bengals are coming off a sloppy 5-turnover loss to the Colts. Chad Ochocinco caught his 65th career TD against the Colts, placing him second in franchise history. But really, the threat downfield for Cincinnati has been Ocho's opposite, T.O. Terrell Owens ranks second in the AFC, 59 catches, 834 yards, and 7 touchdowns. In the victory over the Lions, Fred Jackson had his best game of the season for Buffalo, rushing for 133 yards, a touchdown, gaining 37 yards, and adding another TD receiving. Buffalo quarterback Ryan Fitzpatrick has thrown a TD pass in 10 straight games, longest streak for a Bills quarterback since 2002. But Cincinnati is playing at home as they take on the Bills, coming off a win from a week ago. Eric?
Detroit and Dallas face off in a game that you know, that everything is kind of flipped over in about a 2 weeks' time. Detroit was the team on the rise. You know, they'd had a couple of nice games beating the Redskins. They play the Jets tooth and nail, lose in overtime, and then come back the next week and lose to the Bills in a close game, the two-point conversion falling short at the end of the contest. And for the first time, Jim Schwartz, as head coach in Detroit, is facing the kind of questions that, you know, guys like Wade Phillips faced early in the year. What about his game management skills? Does he have the right tools to be a head coach who can run a team? He called a late timeout in the game against the Redskins, called for a pass on 3rd and 5 in a situation where he probably should have run the ball, run the clock down. Jets were able to tie it, winning in overtime. It's funny how things have changed now, because in Dallas, those coaching questions have been put aside for now. And Jason Garrett got this team back on track last week. We talked about it earlier in the show. You know, the offense showed some life. The offensive line was such a weakness early in the season. Now they catch a Lions team that's a little bit weak. And at home, the Dallas Cowboys look pretty strong all of a sudden. Then you look at a game like Cleveland and Jacksonville, and the Browns, you know, they put forth such a great effort the last 3 weeks. Peyton Hillis has been the man offensively. They've got great schemes defensively. But the loss last week had to hurt. They took the Jets all the way down, had them in a situation where they probably could have won the game, dramatic comeback to tie it before overtime. So they've all of a sudden got to face a Jacksonville team that, you know, we saw the heroics last week with Mike Thomas catching that deflected pass at the end of the game. But it's been more than that, I think. They've come through as a team. They've put aside all the questions about Jack Del Rio as head coach. Offensively, they're starting to throw the ball. And it's a real interesting situation they got there. So Cleveland has their hands full.
Well, Eric, the Washington Redskins are coming off an embarrassing Monday night loss to the Philadelphia Eagles, and this week they're in the Music City to take on the Tennessee Titans, who've lost 2 in a row. Skins are perplexing in many ways, but after a 4-2 start, now they've lost 2 straight, maybe settling into their usual dysfunctional selves. Baggage, heavy baggage during the bye week concerning Donovan McNabb's worthiness to run the 2-minute offense of Coach Mike Shanahan resulted in a contract extension for the quarterback prior to the blowout loss to Washington. It's nothing more than a PR stunt in terms of McNabb and the Redskins. We'll see how it all plays out. For the Titans, they've got their own potential problems with the acquisition of the mercurial wide receiver Randy Moss, who is struggling to get open. Let's face it, he has just 30 receiving yards or less in his last 3 games. And you know, I got to tell you, Eric, he's not a factor anymore, and that's why Brad Childress summarily cut him loose from Minnesota after just 3 weeks.
You know, we looked to New Orleans, Wayne, where the Saints got a much-needed bye week. We talked about Bush coming back. Wait another week for Pierre Thomas to see if he's ready. But I think this defense is starting to show that it can really make some hay and make those big plays they did last season. The Seahawks have been one of the tougher teams to predict this year. I mean, they're up 1 week, down the next. You know, Pete Carroll's had some coaching moments. He found a gem in Mike Williams down there. But the 4th-and-1 call with Matt Hasselbeck got his quarterback concussed. A lot of people questioning him for that. So look for the Saints in this game to take advantage of their rest and scheme for this team very well and defeat the Seahawks in week 11.
Well, Eric, I've got a good old-fashioned AFC West battle brewing in San Diego with the Chargers in their typical resurgence. They've now won 2 in a row and at 4-5 looking to make their move in this traditionally weak AFC West. Denver snapped a 4-game losing streak with a totally unexpected blasting of the Kansas City Chiefs, 49-29 last week. All you need to know here, The Chargers have arguably the hottest quarterback and passing game in the NFL. Now, whether they have Antonio Gates or Vincent Jackson or Malcolm Floyd, or, as has been the case recently, not, he's going to get it done. Rivers is second to David Garrard in AFC quarterback rating, but really, I mean, come on. Who would you rather have quarterbacking your team? Denver gave up 469 yards and four touchdowns through the air last week to Matt Castle and the Chiefs. Now, you know, I know Matt Castle, and he's no Philip Rivers. Stay tuned. The big games are coming up next on Pro Football Week. This is Wayne Larrivee, along with senior editor Eric Edholm of Pro Football Weekly. Hub Arkish is on assignment. Some of the top games on this weekend's NFL card. Well, Eric, the 3-6 Arizona Cardinals are in Kansas City, where the 5-4 Chiefs hope to hold on to their share of the lead in the AFC West. Cardinals have lost four in a row since upsetting New Orleans October 10th. Chiefs are coming in off the 49-29 debacle at the hands of the Broncos last week. How do you see this one going?
Boy, did the Broncos show a blueprint on how to beat that young defense or what? I mean, that's what concerns me about this Chiefs group. I mean, they played so well defensively, helped Peyton Manning to 19 points early in the year, have done a great job all season long, Philip Rivers week one. And yet, you know, can they bounce back, or is this one going to really sting? I mean, I think Arizona's vulnerable. They're coming into Kansas City. I like the look of this game for the Chiefs. They got to show some maturity here.
Yeah, the way the Cardinals are struggling defensively, they're going to have a hard time containing all that Kansas City speed on the offensive side of the football. Meanwhile, the Green Bay Packers rematch with the Minnesota Vikings, this time at the Metrodome in Minneapolis. Greg Matzik has the story.
The Green Bay Packers and Minnesota Vikings enter their Week 11 matchup heading in entirely different directions. Coming off the bye week, the 6-3 Packers are looking to build on a three-game winning streak that has vaulted them to the top of the NFC North. With five key opening day starters on injured reserve and several others missing time due to injury, the Packers have exemplified what it is to play team football in a family atmosphere. With four of their five next games on the road and an eager Chicago Bears team looking to take the division as well, the Packers are hoping to get off to a good start with their post-bye week schedule. Packers quarterback Aaron Rodgers.
It's going to be a tough stretch for us, but I think we've been a great road team under Coach McCarthy. I think it starts with his schedule and the way that he approaches those games and realizing it's our 53 against a hostile crowd and the other team. So I think we look at it the right way. We focus on it as a business trip with one goal in mind. That's coming away with a victory.
And if everything in Packerland is rainbows and lollipops, the Minnesota Vikings are fat, lonesome toads in a dank swamp, a team littered with Pro Bowl talent and high expectations, but lacking identity. The Vikings' comedy of antics on and off the field have led to locker room dissension, reported team backlash against head coach Brad Childress, loss of a third-round draft pick, and a 3-6 record. Still, the Vikings own a 3-1 record at home, and despite a sore elbow, sore shoulder, ailing ankle, and countless other bruises, Brett Favre is too proud a player to roll over against his former team and bitter division rival in his 295th consecutive start. The Vikings need to wake from their season-long slumber, and they need to do it now.
It is a now or never, do or die, our backs against the wall, whatever you want to call it. And hopefully all of our guys will take that approach that I have to do my job first.
Regardless of the records or the direction, at the end of the day, it's still the Packers and Vikings. Two proud franchises who flat out don't like each other. Sunday afternoon in Minneapolis. For Pro Football Weekly, I'm Greg Matzik.
Fat, lonesome tones, Wayne. I mean, that says it all about the Vikings. Everything that could go wrong has gone wrong. I don't know how they turn this thing around. You know, you've got people maybe not playing hurt, maybe not doing enough to help their team. I just don't see it against a Packers team that looks like it's hitting its stride a little bit.
Well, you know, you look at Brett Favre. I mean, the Vikings, it's football, so it's never about one guy. But consider this guy. He was so good a year ago, took them almost to the Super Bowl. This year, 21 turnovers have been charged to Brett Favre of the 23 turnovers committed by Minnesota, and they're minus 12 on the turnover table. That tells you a lot about why they have underachieved at 3-6. Meanwhile, the Houston Texans are reeling. They've lost three in a row since the bye week, and I'm not quite sure what's happened there. Sunday, they take a 4-5 mark into the new Meadowlands, where the 7-2 New York Jets awaited. Eric, for Houston, this is the season right here. They could ill afford another loss.
Yeah, I think defensively, you have to consider whether they're the worst group in the league right now. You know, we talked about the Redskins earlier and their debacle on Monday night, and yet the stats show that they've given up at least 24 points every single game, and this might be the worst pass defense. You got to throw the pass rush in there, the coverage of the linebackers, but the secondary mostly. They're the worst pass defense in the league right now. And, you know, Mark Sanchez gaining confidence, two straight overtime wins on the road. You know, this one slants in a certain direction, and it's not towards Houston.
And, you know, they've tried defensively. They've loaded a lot of high draft picks into that defense down in Houston, and it just hasn't worked. Meanwhile, the Atlanta Falcons on the road in St. Louis to take on the improved Rams. Good matchup of young quarterbacks as Matt Ryan leads the Falcons against rookie Sam Bradford in the Rams.
You know, I can't wait to see this matchup. Bradford has been mature beyond his years. Lost a lot, hard one in San Francisco last week, but they play really well at home. And I think everybody just assumes the extra time, the Falcons are going to be fine. They're playing in a dome of familiar sort of surroundings for them. But this Rams team and this young defense under Steve Spagnuolo has really come through it with some big plays this year.
Coming up, we'll tell you about the Giants in Philly and Oakland at Pittsburgh. We'll have more top games coming up after these messages on Pro Football Weekly. Welcome back to Pro Football Weekly. We resume with our preview of the top games in the NFL. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers are one of the most improved teams in the league this season. In the last month, the San Francisco 49ers have shaken off an 0-5 start and have won three of their last four. So you figure something's got to give here. Are the 49ers really on the road to respectability? Are the Buccaneers that good? And I think we're going to find out a lot in the Bay Area this weekend, Eric.
I'm always a little suspicious of a young team having one of these kind of seasons like the Bucs are having, having to go on the road and go as far as they're going to go. And I like what I've seen out of Troy Smith. You know, I mean, he looked like the Heisman-winning Troy Smith last week. A lot of big plays, great confidence, stepped into his throws. They're getting Michael Crabtree involved again. I wouldn't be shocked if this 49ers team comes in and plays one of their best ball games of the season.
Meanwhile, the New York Giants may have hit a speed bump last week at home as they were soundly beaten by the Dallas Cowboys, but this week they've got to take on the Philadelphia Eagles, and Bart Pasterna has more.
When referring to his nefarious past, Eagles quarterback Michael Vick is quick to point out that many individuals from that time period no longer have access to him. To quote Vick, "They can't get to me." Well, of late, Michael could also use that line with regard to NFL opponents, as his performance, including a rip-roaring effort versus Washington last Monday, has helped lift Philadelphia into a first-place tie in the NFC East with this Sunday night's foe, the Giants. The Eagles, including Vick, are healthier now than they were when there was confusion over the QB situation. Who was going to beef up the offensive backfield? Who was going to step up at wide receiver when D-Jax was out a bit? Who was going to fill some defensive holes?
They do have a defense, too. And the defense, defense is good, and their special teams is good, and they cover well, and they run well. They got a good football team.
Yeah, but Coach Coughlin, your Giants are going to be running into Vic and that scintillating Eagle offense that's starting to make things look oh so easy.
It's not going to be easy against New York. It wasn't easy against Washington. It may have looked easy, but it wasn't. So each and every play is critical. Each and every down is critical. You just got to play with confidence, but you can't be too confident.
All right, Michael, we defer to your assessment, but really, this isn't the last time that you started against Big Blue and got buried. Okay, you've been sacked an average of 2.5 times per game, but you haven't thrown a pick yet. You have 11 passing TDs, 4 rushing TDs in, what, 6 games? You have helped turn LeSean McCoy into Westbrook Light, and unlike your Giants counterpart Eli Manning, you don't have receivers quit on routes or tip passes into defenders' hands. Your O-line and receiving core aren't going for group MRIs every other day. Uh-oh, I think Eli heard me.
At 1 week, you know, everybody's kind of talking the way they were talking about Philly this week. You know, they were talking about us last week. And so, you know, things changed quickly, but either way, it can't go to your head, whether they're talking good about you or talking bad about you.
No talking bad here, just the facts. The Eagles are the flavor of the week. After their debacle versus Dallas, the Giants' freshness date is about to expire, unless they can avoid a stink at the link. For Pro Football Weekly, I'm Bart Pasterna.
Wayne, I think that's going to be the key to this game is how the offensive line's played. Philly didn't need a great offensive line performance last week. Vic did it all on his own, and he did a darn good job. But facing this Giants defensive line is a huge test for anybody. On the flip side, the Giants offensive line, all the injuries they've had, going up against an active Eagles front that likes to blitz, use multiple looks, I think that's on each side of the ball the key matchup.
All right, surging Oakland Raiders, meanwhile. I can't believe I just said that. Travel to Pittsburgh to renew one of the great AFC rivalries of the 70s. Jim Colony provides our preview.
It was almost a year ago that with the Steelers in the midst of what would become a 5-game losing streak and a not very good Raiders team coming to Heinz Field, Coach Mike Tomlin promised to unleash hell and the Steelers unleashed hell all right on themselves as James Ferrier and the defense gave up 3 fourth-quarter touchdowns to Oakland.
Yeah, that was bad. That was bad. That was a tough loss for us. It was definitely a disappointing loss, giving up 21 in the fourth quarter. That's something that, you know, is uncharacteristic of our defense.
Well, actually, it was all too characteristic of the Steelers during that 5-game skid a year ago as the Steelers went from 6-2 to not making the playoffs. And after losing at home Sunday night to New England, after being 6-2, Ben Roethlisberger says he and Hines Ward are determined to not let that happen again.
We both kind of said, you know what, it's time for us as veteran guys, leaders that have been around here for a while and played late season ball, postseason ball, to whether guys have only done it once or twice or never. We have to show them how to do this.
Yeah, of course, last season the Raiders were not good, 3-8 coming in. This season they're looking more like some of those old Oakland teams that used to come into Three Rivers Stadium for some battles. Tom Cable's team has won 4 out of 5 and 3 in a row.
We're handling it fine because we're staying grounded to what our principles are and what's brought us some success and making that our focus rather than all the other stuff.
Well, they've averaged over 38 points in those 3 wins, and they've looked like they found a quarterback too, Jason Campbell. And while the Raiders can run the ball and like to run the ball, Steelers safety Ryan Clark wouldn't be surprised if Oakland looks to exploit the Steelers through the air, out of Tom Brady.
You know, Oakland Raiders football is the deep ball, and you got guys like Jacoby Ford, extremely fast receiver, Hayward Bay's making some plays now. Look at this fullback, who we think is probably the best, and this is going to be a big statement, maybe the best pass receiver fullback in the NFL right now.
I mean, Michael Bush, of course, Cable saw what Brady and the Patriots did through the air last Sunday, but if Cable's planning on stealing any of New England's strategy, he's not giving anything up.
It does show you some things I think are interesting. You know, you're playing a physical opponent, a team that likes to throw the ball but has the ability to run it, a team that prides themselves on stopping the run and, you know, likes to rush the passer.
Now, one thing Cable may be able to exploit defensively is a patchwork Pittsburgh offensive line, particularly with Jonathan Scott replacing Max Starks at left tackle. Speaking of replacements, the Steelers dumped kicker Jeff Reed, who was the most accurate kicker over the last 3 NFL seasons, but the most inaccurate kicker through 10 weeks this season, and they signed Sean Sweezum. Sweezum said he has a plan.
Yeah, I don't plan on missing any field goals.
And that would be a good career move for him, but the Steelers also need to score more touchdowns when they get inside the 10 and the 5-yard line. In Pittsburgh, I'm Jim Colony for Pro Football Weekly.
And no word whether a towel dispenser met its match after Reed was cut, but, you know, look back, Wayne, Steelers were 6-2 last year. They fell to that 5-game streak where they fell out of the race. You know, Raiders are one of the teams that beat them, so they can't snooze on this one.
No question about it. Stay tuned. We've got the headliner and the handicapper's corner up next on Pro Football. Football Weekly. The headliner, an in-depth preview of the top attraction on this weekend's NFL card. It's Peyton Manning against Tom Brady. It's the Colts and Patriots, the premier rivalry in the AFC today. Mike Petralia previews our headliner.
Since Bill Belichick became head coach of the Patriots in 2000, New England has faced Peyton Manning 14 times, including 3 times in the playoffs. The Colts have won 4 of the last 5 meetings, with all 5 decided by 7 points or less. Belichick expects another close game.
I think if you look at most of our games against Indianapolis, most of them have been very close, whichever way they've gone. You know, even if the score doesn't quite reflect it, I think the overall competitiveness of the games would. You know, a play or two here or there, and, you know, you could have things a little different direction. So our games have been very competitive.
Everyone in New England remembers that play last November at Lucas Oil Field in Indianapolis. The other quarterback in Sunday showdown, Tom Brady, recalls 4th and 2 when he hit an open running back, Kevin Faulk, in the flat, but instead of 2 yards, he was called short by about 3 inches.
I haven't thought about it at all since probably that game, since that night, as a matter of fact. You know, I think when it comes down to those situations, and it could happen this weekend, I'm always confident that we're going to be able to make the play. So, you know, our coach has always had a lot of faith in what we do offensively and the way the offensive line protects and the way the receivers get open. You know, he's gone for it a bunch on 4th down this year, so if it comes down to it again, I wouldn't expect anything different.
Manning and company took over the Patriots 29 and drove in for the go-ahead score with just 13 seconds to go in a gut-wrenching 35-34 loss to the Colts.
They've always been a good team when we've played them, and you always know it's going to be a challenge.
Belichick holds an 8-6 mark against the Colts since taking over in 2000, including 2-1 in the postseason, and will again have to pull out all the stops to beat Manning this Sunday as he brings his 6-3 injury-riddled Colts to Foxborough.
Yeah, I mean, it's no secret he's good. I don't think that's a big news story, right? he's great. I mean, he's a great quarterback, so he does a good job no matter who's in there. You know, there's not many bad plays from him, many at all. He does a great job managing the team, getting the team in the right play, very accurate passer. He takes what you give him.
The two teams are meeting for the sixth straight year in the month of November and for the eighth straight season, despite the fact the Colts left for the AFC South in 2002. In New England, I'm Mike Petralia, Pro Football Weekly.
Thank you, Mike. Should be another epic. The Indianapolis Colts and New England Patriots, one of the premier rivalries in today's NFL, our headliner this week on Pro Football Weekly. Time now for the Handicapper's Corner with race and sports executive Chuck Esposito from the Venetian in Las Vegas. And Chuck, let's begin this week. There's some interesting games out there, but some weird lines as well. I don't know if I could ever remember the Green Bay Packers going into the Metrodome to play the Vikings as a favorite.
I agree with you, Wayne. I mean, this is a huge game. It could be. Brett Favre's last game against the Green Bay Packers, and with the struggles the Vikings have had, it might be the equivalent of a playoff game for them. Even 9-7 probably doesn't get them in the playoffs. They've got a lot of injuries. It's a soap opera or a circus in Minnesota as we speak, and they're getting points at home against the Green Bay Packers.
Chuck, if you were to look ahead 2 weeks ago to this Giants-Eagles game on Sunday, you would have figured the Giants, one of the hottest teams in the league, Philly kind of up and down a little bit. Since then, Michael Vick has kind of taken over. His performance Monday was epic. The Giants fell hard in a huge loss to the Cowboys. Now the Eagles are 3.5-point favorites at home. How do you see this one shaping up?
It changes so quickly, Eric, in the NFL. You look at early in the season, the Giants had were rumors of Coughlin was out. They were 1-2. They were no good. They were done. Cowher was going to be the new coach there. They turned it around. They had the best record in the NFC. They laid an egg against the Cowboys, reading their press clippings too much. Michael Vick and the Eagles are that public team again, and right now they're the vogue team. But I still want to see Vick beat some good teams, some good division teams, and conference teams as the schedule moves on. He's beat a lot of the lower-end teams in the league. And as you said, they're over a field goal favorite right now against the Giants.
One last point, Chuck. New Orleans may be getting Reggie Bush back into the lineup. How much of an impact does getting a player like that back into the lineup affect the line of a game like between New Orleans and Seattle?
Well, we're going to have to take a wait and see. I think he's looking at about 8 to 12 plays or 8 to 12 carries right now, but you saw their offensive production decrease when Bush and Pierre Thomas went out. Getting a dynamic player like Bush back, and he may return punts, may open up a lot of things for Drew Brees, a lot of screens, a lot of draws, a lot of play action, so he definitely adds a dimension to the game. They're a huge favorite, almost a 2-touchdown favorite, but we have to see how healthy Bush is as the season progresses, but it's a big plus on their offense moving forward.
Thanks, Chuck. We'll talk to you next week. Stay tuned. The Publisher's Pen is next on Pro Football Weekly. The Publisher's Pen with the Publisher and Editor, Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkush. Hub is off this week. He'll return for the Publisher's Pen next week, but Eric, at home, one of the biggest developing stories this season is Michael Vick going from prison to now being one of the front runners for MVP and Comeback Player of the Year, all in the course of about two seasons. It's an incredible story.
I think the second award, the Comeback Award, is probably the favorite for the MVP. He's got a little work to do. He's only played 5.5 of 9 games, but again, just 11 touchdowns, 0 interceptions. He's on fire right now.
And a big game coming up against the Giants this weekend for the Eagles. That'll do it for Pro Football Weekly this week. Special thanks to the Jaguars and Bucks Radio Networks. The executive coordinating producer and engineer of Pro Football Weekly is Randy Meyer. Pro Football Weekly originates in the studios of Syndication Networks in Chicago, Illinois. Now for Hub Arkush, Eric at home, and the entire Pro Football Weekly staff, this is Wayne Larrabee. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next week on Pro Football Weekly.